Just over a year ago, when I was at CLAN, I bought a book called 12 Ordinary Men, telling the story of the 12 disciples, and I actually read it twice through on the trot. And it made me realize how little I actually know about the 12 disciples. These 12 men are 12 of the most influential people the world has ever had, and I struggled to actually name them all. And I don't know about you, whether you can name all 12 of them, but an awful lot of people who supposedly active Christians probably would struggle. Hopefully you can manage the first four, Simon, Peter, James, John, and Andrew. You might even manage the second four, Philip, Nathaniel or Bartholomew, Matthew, Levi, and Thomas. But whether you can manage the last four probably is the big test. James, Thaddeus or Judas, Simon, and Judas Iscariot. Today I'm talking about Andrew, who fascinated me when I read the book. He's probably got a special place in my heart now, having done this, because I realized how little there is actually in the Bible about him, but how powerful a person he was, and how important his ministry was to the other disciples. And what I'm going to do today is a kind of a glorified Bible study, going through the different sections in the Bible that Andrew has mentioned. And if you take out the duplications, there are only really about 8 or 9 different readings that he's mentioned. And some of those it's just lists or just in mention in passing. But I'm going to whip through them all, hopefully fairly quickly, and be of interest to yourselves. So the first time we come across Andrew is in John's Gospel, in John chapter 1. The next day, John was there again with 2 disciples when he saw Jesus passing by and said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the 2 disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" They said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." So they went and saw where he was staying and spent the day with him. It was about 4 in the afternoon. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the 2 who heard what John had said and who followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah, that is the Christ." And he brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You will be known as Cephas," which is translated as Peter. My first thought is, why were Andrew and John in Bethany? And if you look at the map, Bethany's right down beside Jerusalem, and they were from the top of the Sea of Galilee, about 120 miles away. Andrew appears not to be passively waiting for God, but is hungry and actively seeking him out. He had possibly been to Jerusalem for a Passover, or maybe had specially traveled down to hear John. But a few days before the reading I just did, John the Baptist had said out loud that he was not the Messiah, but only a messenger. So if Andrew was there looking for the Messiah, why did he stay? Did he sense there was something special going on, or something special going to happen? I'd like to think that Andrew was the hungry one of the 2. And therefore the first person he brought to Jesus was not his brother Simon Peter, as most people think, but possibly John, the other disciple, if he egged him on. And what was Simon doing there? He doesn't seem to be part of the story. Was he down there as a chaperone? We don't know how young John and Andrew were at the time, and it's a long way from home. Possibly Simon came with them just to keep an eye on them, but he doesn't seem to have stayed around. So they were there listening to this supposedly mad preacher, for some people anyway, and he was supposed to be there just to keep an eye on them. But when John and Andrew went to stay with Jesus overnight, Simon Peter wasn't around. Maybe he'd had enough of hearing John and gone elsewhere for the night. The next morning, however, Andrew is again at his work of bringing people to Jesus and immediately goes to get his brother. Now, as you will know from the Gospels, Peter is very much the boss. So Simon was bringing his brother, knowing that he was going to be kind of taking over, that Peter would take over what was happening. But that doesn't seem to stop him. Bringing people to Jesus was much more important to him. And Jesus then called him the rock, possibly planting a seed in Simon's brain. The next reading is from Mark's Gospel, and this is really the calling of the four, Peter, John, James, and Andrew. As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. "Come and follow me," Jesus said, "and I will send you out to fish for people." At once they left the nets and followed him. When he had gone a little farther, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat preparing their nets. Without delay, he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men and followed him. They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to preach. The people were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one of them who had authority, not as a teacher of the law. Could Jesus' meeting with Andrew, Simon, and John have been a deliberate act back in the first reading? To our knowledge, it's the only time that Jesus speaks to his would-be disciples before calling them. Was Jesus preparing them, knowing that they'd have to settle matters with their family and their business? And if so, why? Were they the only ones with a family and with businesses? We'll find out later on that Peter at least was married. I'm not sure about any of the other disciples. So was this a reason why he did this? If so, Jesus knew that these four people were critical to his ministry, and he was trying to remove any barriers that might have been getting in their way for joining him in the future. Following on from the last reading, on leaving the temple, Jesus then went to the house of Simon Peter. So you can see from that one very brief reading that Andrew was living in a large family group with Simon Peter and family members there as part of the running their fishing boats and living in Capernaum on the north shore. Now the next reading is the calling of Philip, and we learn from that one that Andrew and Peter actually came from a place called Bethsaida, which nobody quite knows exactly where it is, but again, it's on the north shore of Lake Galilee. The next time that they're mentioned is when Jesus decides on his 12 disciples. When he first started, he had a large following, and he whittled that down to 72, who went out and in pairs to the area around where Jesus was preaching to proclaim the message. But Jesus realized that 72 was too big a group, and if he was going to train people up to follow on from him, he had to reduce the numbers down from the 72 to a smaller number of 12, possibly to signify the 12 tribes. So Jesus went up into mountain and called to him those he wanted, and they came to him. He appointed 12 that they might be with him, and they might spend time that he might send them out to preach and to have authority to drive out demons. These 12 he appointed: Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, to whom he gave the name Boanerges, which means son of thunder, Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. I think the most telling thing of that, and something that all of us probably are slightly guilty about doing, is that Jesus went away. He didn't just do it there and then on the spot. He went up a mountain, probably prayed for a while, and then called the people up to him. We are awfully guilty of trying to fit things into our busy lives without taking the time to pull back and allow God to come into our lives. And no doubt there was a tremendous amount of praying done as he thought of which were the 12 disciples he was going to pick. Andrew's next visit into the Bible is the feeding of the 5,000. Where are we? Jesus went up a mountainside and sat down with the disciples. The Jewish Passover feast was near, and when Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for those who eat, for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "It would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough bread to eat for each to have a bite." Another of these disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "Here is a boy with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But how far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. I think this shows the faith that Andrew has, and also is a story showing the third person that Andrew brings to Jesus. Andrew shows himself here to be a thoughtful and willing to have faith in Jesus. He had been the first of the disciples to proclaim Jesus as the Messiah, and at that moment he seemed to have a deeper understanding of what Jesus was looking for from the disciples than the others. He seemed to sense that Jesus could do something with a small quantity of bread and fish. Something that at least Philip at least could not understand, and probably most of the others. So you think, that's it. Andrew has grasped the nettle. But 12 hours later, when they set off across the Sea of Galilee, Andrew, along with all the other 11, was fearing for his life, thinking that the boat was going to sink because Jesus wasn't with them. So it was very much a temporary grasp of what was happening. The next reading I'm actually going to put in doesn't actually involve Andrew, and that's the Transfiguration. Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a mountain where they were alone. Then he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could have bleached them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Following on from that is another reading from Mark's Gospel. As Jesus was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings." "Do you see all these great buildings?" replied Jesus. "Not one here, one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down." As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked privately, "Tell us, when will these things happen, and what the sign will be that they are all about to be fulfilled?" In the first reading, my first thought was, where is Andrew? You always sort of group Andrew together with Peter, James, and John, but he obviously wasn't quite part of the close-knit group around Jesus. He seemed to have a deeper understanding of what Jesus was wanting than certainly some of the other disciples, but he wasn't part of the inner circle. Jesus appears to be part of this closer group, but maybe not at the critical times. Why would that be? Did Jesus only allow Andrew to be part of that group because he was Simon Peter's brother, and possibly because John was his best friend? Was he too quiet? Was he too young? Well, it's possible that all of these may be part of the truth, but I think that the main reason that Jesus didn't really include Andrew in the committee group of three was that he had other uses for Andrew. As a bridge between the inner circle and the other disciples. And he also wanted him unencumbered by other matters, free to bring people to Jesus as necessary. The next reading from John is, now there were some Greeks among those who went to worship at a festival. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. Sir, they said, we would like to see Jesus. Philip went to tell Andrew. Andrew and Philip, in turn, told Jesus. When Philip was too scared to bring the non-Jews to Jesus, there was only one person he would turn to, and that was Andrew. In doing so, he allowed Andrew to do what Andrew does best, which is bringing people to Jesus, regardless of who they are or where they're from. And the final entry in the Bible for Andrew is a list of the disciples in the room after Jesus died. And after that, he's not mentioned at all in the Bible. From other sources, it appears that Andrew moved north to the Constantinople area, and then spread his ministry up towards Russia and down into Greece. And he is accredited with making the first bishop of Constantinople and the first bishop of Patmos in Greece. In Patmos, however, according to legend, he converted the wife of an important Roman who was somewhat upset at this and had Andrew crucified. But Andrew, not wanting to be crucified in the same format that Jesus, asked to be crucified on a saltire cross that we have for the Scottish flag, and was supposedly on the cross for a couple of days, still preaching his message of coming to Jesus. Andrew was buried in Patmos, and then supposedly his bones were taken to Constantinople, and our town of St. Andrews in Scotland was named after him when round about 1000 AD some of his relics were supposedly brought to St. Andrews and buried in the monastery. They're not there now, I'm afraid, because when the Reformation came, the bones were taken out and destroyed. So what does the legacy of Andrew mean for us? First of all, that he actively sought for something. He didn't passively wait around for God to come to him. He went looking for God. He was first of all a disciple of John the Baptist with his best friend John. He was the first follower of Jesus. He was the first to declare Jesus the Messiah. He loved bringing people to Jesus, starting with John. And at times he seemed to understand Jesus better than the other disciples, although, as I showed, that was only fleeting. Because at the time of Jesus' arrest, he, along with all the other disciples, abandoned Jesus to his fate. But I think the most important thing is that Andrew didn't prejudge people. It didn't matter if they were Jews or non-Jews, but he brought everyone to Jesus, regardless of who they were or what their backgrounds were. Now, hopefully I've given you some things to think about, but I'm going to put up two more questions there for you. What brought you to Christianity? A hunger for the Word of God, or were you led to Christianity by an Andrew? And how important are missionaries like Andrew to the survival of our church? And I think if people can maybe just get into small groups for 5 minutes or so and discuss that, and then we'll have the final song.